Just going to get settled here. Yeah, that could come. Oh, that's perfect. Thank you. All right, so this morning, I'd like to take a couple looks at the boundaries and borders of Israel over their history, and then I'd like to talk about four ways that we can pray, and we'll see how that goes. Yeah, so if you've got your Bibles, we could open up to Genesis 15. And we're going to read first before we put up the pictures. So in Genesis 15, we hear a lot about the beginning of the chapter. But in the end, we hear about borders for Israel. So if Genesis 15 is a real long chapter, I can start in verse 5, where God brings Abraham outside and says, "Look now toward heaven and count the stars if you are able to number them." And he said to him, "So shall your descendants be." We're all pretty familiar with these lead passages here. Then he said to him, "I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land to inherit it." And he said, "Lord God, how shall I know that I will inherit it?" And God cuts a covenant here. So he said to him, "Bring me a three-year-old heifer, a three-year-old female goat, a three-year-old ram, a turtle dove, and a young pigeon." Then he brought all these to him and cut them in two down the middle and placed each piece opposite the other. But he did not cut the birds in two. And when the vultures came down on the carcasses, Abram drove them away. Now when the sun was going down and a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and behold, horror and great darkness fell upon him. Then he said to Abram, "Know certainly that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, and will serve them, and they will afflict them 400 years. And also the nations whom they serve I will judge. Afterward they shall come out with great possessions. Now as for you, you shall go to your fathers in peace. You shall be buried at a good old age. But in the fourth generation they shall return here, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete." And it came to pass, when the sun went down and it was dark, that behold, there appeared a smoking oven and a burning torch that passed between those pieces. On the same day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, "To your descendants I have given this land, from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates. The Kenites, the Kenizzites, the Kadmonites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Rephaim, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Girgashites, and the Jebusites." So there's a lot here. In the beginning, we see in verse 5 a reference to Abraham's descendants. And so then, that there's no confusion, we get to hear about those descendants from verse 13 on. So if we go back up to Genesis 15:5, Abram's told, "Look now toward the heaven and count the stars if you're able to number them." And he said to him, "So shall your descendants be." So it's pretty certain these descendants are the ones we hear about in 13. These descendants are going to be strangers in a land that's not theirs, serving them. They'll be afflicted by them for 400 years. This is Israel. So, the nation that they serve, he will judge. And afterward, they come out with great possessions. So this is Israel. They're 400 years in Egypt. And it goes on to mention, in the fourth generation, they shall return here. That word generation, dor, has also an Arabic counterpart word, dar, meaning 100 plus years. And so this four generations, fourth generation, is a reference to 400 years. What we're hearing is that in the fourth generation, or after the 400 years, they shall return here, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete. What was going on in Egypt with Israel in Egypt for 400 years in parallel is a wait for the fullness and the time of the Amorites and God's execution of judgment on them. And with God bringing Israel into the land of Canaan, God was executing a judgment on those peoples. So as time passed on, 400 plus years of Israel serving Egypt, and then being able to leave, they have their wanderings in the desert, but at the time that they are to enter and take Canaan, that's also part of God's plan to judge the people in the land. So, God gives over the land and its people to Israel. God cuts this covenant himself. So this covenant is unconditional, and it's unilateral. And so God is telling Abraham about his descendants, these specific descendants, Israel, to you I will give this land. So let's take a look at that. So, from the river of Egypt to the great river, the Euphrates. So God looks at this land, and God is seeing this is Israel's land. God has given this land to Israel. The hard part is if we don't like it, we have to take it up with God. Can we look at the other slide? So here's another rendition of Genesis 15 and the borders. It's similar. So when God looks down, he's given this land himself to Israel. So let's consider, you know, was this ever fully realized? And no, it wasn't. But in the days of Solomon, the kingdom of Solomon did stretch from the Euphrates to Egypt. So it depends on what you're reading. If you read the Septuagint, you'll see it in 1 Kings 5:1. Most of us will probably find this in 2 Chronicles 9:25 and 26. So let's go there. So it says Solomon had 4,000 stalls for horses and chariots and 12,000 horsemen whom he stationed in the chariot cities and with the king at Jerusalem. So he reigned over all the kings from the river to the land of the Philistines as far as the border of Egypt. So what we're hearing is that he reigns from the river, the Euphrates, to the border of Egypt. So let's take a look at that. And let's take a look at the other slide, too. This one's a little clearer. So from the Euphrates to Egypt. So this is Solomon's kingdom. I'll read a little commentary from Jewish Study Bible. In addition to the tribal territories, Solomon controlled two large vassal territories, one northeast of Israel, extending from the Bashan and Golan to the Euphrates, settled by Aramean groups, to the coastland and territories west and southwest of Judah, up to the Egyptian border, settled by tribes originating in lands bordering the Aegean Sea, lumped together under the name of one tribe, Palestu, as Philistines. All paid tribute to Solomon directly. So that's pretty neat. So then if we move along to Numbers 34. We see Israel's borders after the Exodus. So if we look at Numbers 34, we can pick up at verse 3. And let's take a look at that next picture. So it's after the Exodus, and Israel's going to take Canaan, and we're hearing about the borders. So in Numbers 34, verse 3 through 5, we see the southern border. If we would start right in the middle, kind of, and move our way to the left and up that little elbow on the right side. Or I'm sorry, move in the middle to the right, and actually the other way, and up. We hear about, up to the Dead Sea, we'll hear about one portion of the southern border. Then it goes from around the middle, the wilderness of Zin, over to the Mediterranean, and this little arc, we're hearing about the southern border, and that's verse 3 through 5. Your southern border shall be from the wilderness of Zin along to the border of Edom, then your southern border shall extend eastward to the end of the Salt Sea. That's that first little hook from the middle up. Your border will turn from the southern side to the ascent of Akrabbim, continue to Zin, and be on the south of Kadesh Barnea, and then it shall go on to Hazar Adar, and continue to the Asmon. The border shall turn from Asmon to the brook of Egypt, and it shall end at the sea. So that's our southern border. So the western border is the Mediterranean. That's verse 6. As for the western border, you shall have the great sea for a border. This shall be your western border. When we get to the northern border, it picks up in verse 7. And this shall be your northern border. From the great sea you shall mark out your borderline to Mount Hor. From Mount Hor you shall mark out your border to the entrance of Hamath. Then the direction of the border shall be toward Zedad. The border shall proceed to Ziphron, and it shall end at Hazar Enan. This shall be your northern border. So basically we have from the sea across the north, we have a northern border. And it has a little hook. And then we have the eastern border, which runs along the east. And that's verses 10 through 12. You shall mark out your eastern border from Hazar Enan to Shepham. The border shall go down from Shepham to Riblah on the east side of Ain. The border shall go down and reach to the eastern side of the Sea of Chinnereth, or the Sea of Galilee. The border shall go down along the Jordan, and it shall end at the Salt Sea, the Dead Sea. This shall be your land with its surrounding boundaries. So that's the land that was given, but how did it really play out? So when it was time for Israel to take Canaan, Reuben, Gad, and a half-tribe of Manasseh wanted to stay on the east side of the Jordan. So they approached Moses with this idea, and he's like, how are you going to discourage the tribes by not going in and fighting and just staying on the east side? It's kind of like the Princess Bride. Like, hey, have fun storming the promised land. You know, what the decision was is that Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh had to go in and fight. And if they went in and fight, then they could inherit these parcels and places on the east side of the Jordan. If they didn't go in and fight, their inheritance would be found within the confines of these borders. Let's go to Numbers 32. And here's that conversation, 32, verse 5 and 6. Therefore he said, if we have found favor in your sight, let this land be given to your servants as a possession. Do not take us over the Jordan. And Moses said to the children of Gad and the children of Reuben, shall your brethren go to war while you sit here? Now why will you discourage the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord has given them? And then it picks up 28 through 33 of Numbers 32. So Moses gave command concerning them to Eleazar the priest, to Joshua the son of Nun, and the chief fathers of the tribes of the children of Israel. And Moses said to them, if the children of Gad and the children of Reuben cross over the Jordan with you, every man armed for battle before the Lord, and the land is subdued before you, then you shall give them the land of Gilead as a possession. But if they do not cross over armed with you, they shall have possessions among you in the land of Canaan. Then the children of Gad and the children of Reuben answered, saying, as the Lord has said to your servants, so we will do. So let's take a look at the next slide. This is kind of the way it played out. So actually a half-tribe of Manasseh also is on the east side of the Jordan. And all the different tribes have different portions. As north is Sidon. So this will come. This will be an interesting. We'll do a comparison to millennial Israel, and we'll take a look and see how things are different. So this is after the Exodus. This is the borders and the boundaries and the land of Israel. So this is where it gets exciting. So we also have millennial Israel. So what's different about millennial Israel? Well, there's a lot different about millennial Israel, although the borders aren't all that different. What do we mean by millennial Israel? So Jesus is coming back. He's going to reign for 1,000 years. He's going to be reigning out of Jerusalem. He's going to reign as King Messiah. And just that in and of itself, Jesus reigning in Israel makes it a supernatural Israel. It's a reign characterized by justice. Let's check out Isaiah 42, 1 through 4. So Isaiah 42, 1 through 4, behold, my servant whom I uphold, my elect one in whom my soul delights. I have put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the Gentiles. He will not cry out nor raise his voice nor cause his voice to be heard in the street. A bruised reed he will not break, and smoking flax he will not quench. He will bring forth justice for truth. He will not fail nor be discouraged till he has established justice in the earth, and the coastland shall wait for his law. So eschatology is really tricky. Anything probably I'm saying up here from the beginning to the end, there's going to be points and counterpoints, arguments and counterarguments. And eschatologically, that it's very true. But we've got a millennial reign of Jesus. He has to return to be there. So Jesus is reigning as King Messiah. Another interesting thing, if we go into Ezekiel 47, which is classically regarded as a depiction of millennial Israel. So there's a river of life, and this river of life is flowing out from the temple. It's flowing eastward and down the path of the Jordan, down to the Dead Sea, and everything this water touches comes to life. Trees grow and don't wither. There's fruit all the time for food and for medicine, and the Dead Sea becomes the live sea. This is supernatural. People are fishing in the Dead Sea, casting nets and drawing up fish out of the Dead Sea like the Sea of Galilee. So that's Ezekiel 47. We can start at 1. The hand of the Lord came upon me and brought me out in the spirit of the Lord and set me down in the midst of the valley, and it was, We come a long way since then. Then he brought me back to the door of the temple, and there was water flowing from under the threshold of the temple toward the east. The front of the temple faced east. The water was flowing from under the right side of the temple, south of the altar. And we pick up in verse 6. And he said to me, Son of man, have you seen this? Then he brought me and returned me to the bank of the river. When I returned there, along the bank of the river, were very many trees on one side and the other. Then he said to me, This water flows towards the eastern region, goes down into the valley, and then enters the sea. When it reaches the sea, its waters are healed. And it shall be that every living thing that moves, wherever the rivers go, will live. There will be a very great multitude of fish, because these waters go there, for they will be healed, and everything will live wherever the river goes. And it shall be that fishermen will stand by it from En Gedi to Eglim. They will be places for spreading their nets. Their fish will be of the same kinds as the fish of the great sea, exceedingly many. So this is pretty amazing. Another interesting part of millennial Israel is that the land is divided equally between the tribes. So let's go to that picture if we can. Yeah. And we'll talk about that in a minute. Let's back up to the previous. We saw Israel, the Exodus 34 Israel, with the red borders. And now we are seeing, with the blue borders, the millennial Israel. So Ezekiel 47, if we go to 15 through 17, we have a north border. This shall be the border on the land of the land on the north, from the great sea by the road to Hethlon, as one goes to Zedad, Hamath, Berothath, Sibraim, which is between the border of Damascus and the border of Hamath, to Hazar Hadakon, which is on the border of Horan. Thus the boundary shall be from the sea to Hazar Enan, the border of Damascus. And as for the north, northward, it is the border of Hamath. This is the north side. So we see a blue line kind of depicting that at the top of the slide. Then we see an eastern border in verse 18. We see a blue line going down the east side. And this is Ezekiel 47, verse 18. On the east side, you shall mark out the border from between Haran and Damascus and between Gilead and the land of Israel along the Jordan and along the eastern side of the sea. This is the east side. So we're following this blue border along, and we've come to the southern border. That's verse 19. The south side toward the south shall be from Tamar to the waters of Meribah by Kadesh along the brook to the great sea. This is the south side toward the south. And verse 20 has the western border. The west side shall be the great sea from the southern boundary until one comes to a point opposite Hamath. This is the west side. So we have a millennial Israel. And we're talking about this is a very different place. It's a supernatural place. King Messiah, Jesus, is reigning there. Justice is going forth out of Zion. The river of life is flowing out from under the temple down, and everything has come alive. There's trees and leaves and fruit for food and medicine, and the Dead Sea is the live sea. and wherever the river goes, things come to life. So the other thing that's interesting is that when we look at the layout, that the land is equally divided between the tribes. So let's take a look back at that. So look at that. It's millennial Israel and all the tribes. There's no lost tribes? Nope, they're there. I mean, this is prophecy. I mean, Paul knew this. You know, that's why he could say all Israel would be saved. It didn't mean that a Jew wasn't going to be lost. But it does mean that Israel will serve its Messiah and worship its God. All of Israel. So equal portions. So, and what's interesting about these equal portions, how they're divided up, it says that strangers who dwell among you shall be as native born. People that are in with you are to be treated as and like yourself. So that's Ezekiel 47, 21. Thus you shall divide this land among yourselves according to the tribes of Israel. That's what we're looking at. And it shall be that you will divide it by lot as an inheritance for yourselves and for the strangers who dwell among you and who bear children among you. They shall be to you as native born among the children of Israel. They shall have an inheritance with you among the tribes of Israel. And it shall be that in whatever tribe the stranger dwells, there you shall give him his inheritance, says the Lord God. It's a pretty friendly place. And so the last characteristic here is that Jerusalem isn't called Jerusalem here. It's called the Lord is there. Why? Because the Lord is there. Jesus is there, reigning. Ezekiel 48:35. It's preceded by talking about the exits and the gates of the city. And in verse 35, all the way around shall be 18,000 cubits, and the name of the city from that day shall be the Lord is there. So this gives me goosebumps, even though I'm hot. This is... pretty exciting stuff. So let's talk about four ways that we can pray. We can pray and intercede one for America. We can pray and intercede for the church. We can pray and intercede for Israel. And we can pray and intercede for ourselves. So first, maybe we can talk about praying for America. If we open to Zechariah 14. So Zechariah 14, 1 through 5. Behold, the day of the Lord is coming, and your spoil will be divided in your midst. For I will gather all the nations to battle against Jerusalem. So how many nations? All the nations. So is it saying that all the nations are going to come against Jerusalem and America? No. All nations are going to battle against Jerusalem, including America. So that's a rough concept. The demise. All right, back for more. So we're talking about the demise of America. So God says, whoever touches Zion touches the apple of his eye, in Zechariah 2. And it really speaks of God's menacing judgment on those who touch Zion. This is pretty weighty stuff. So we can pray for America. America apparently is going to go and battle against Jerusalem with all the other nations. America is going to be facing judgment by God. And it's not very pretty. But I wonder if prayers and intercessors might be able to take a deep dive into the spirit realm and maybe intercede or pray for mercy or grace, kind of like Abraham did for Sodom. Would it be possible to talk to God and intercede, like in Genesis 18? God, if there were 40, would you save Sodom? If there were 30, would you save Sodom? Saying yes. If there were 10, God, if there were just 10, would you save Sodom? And he said yes. And so maybe we can pray one for that. God, that maybe you could have 10 people in all of America who are more for Zion than against it. God, if there were just maybe 10 Americans in all of America who are more for Zion than against it, would you save America? So another way to pray is for the church. So if we go to Romans 11, we hear about not getting proud and boasting about our position, but that the root, you don't support the root, but the root supports you. So Romans 11, 18, we're hearing about an attitude. And getting warned about an attitude and exhorted about a different kind of attitude and disposition as the church. Do not boast against the branches, but if you do boast, remember that you do not support the root, but the root supports you. You will say then, branches were broken off that I might be grafted in. Well said, because of unbelief, They were broken off, and you stand by faith. Do not be haughty, but fear. For if God did not spare the natural branches, he may not spare you either. Therefore, consider the kindness and severity of God on those who fell, severity, but toward you, kindness, if you continue in his kindness. Otherwise, you also will be cut off. And they also, if they do not continue in unbelief, will be grafted in, for God is able to graft them in again. So we're hearing about our Jewish roots, and the roots being Israel and the vine and the branches being broken off for the Gentile branches to be grafted in. And we're being exhorted to a type of attitude and disposition, and this is one way we can pray for the church, that we cultivate kindness and not pride, that we cultivate reverence for God, and that we cultivate faith in Jesus, a strong faith in Jesus for us and for Israel. So a third way we can pray is for Israel. So what's in a name, right? We know why Israel got his name. I can read from Stearns. This is the name Israel was given to the third patriarch, Jacob, after he wrestled with a man who was Elohim, or God. And this is Genesis 32, 25 through 31. So Jacob was a wrestler. This is a fact of utmost importance in interpreting the New Testament. God, who knows everything before it happens, gave Jacob this name at this time to symbolize the Jewish people's future wrestling match with him, as recorded in the Old Testament and culminating in 2,000 years of wrestling with Jesus, the Messiah. The entire passage is Genesis 32, 25 through 33. Read it with the understanding that this mysterious man who was God may have been Jesus in a pre-incarnation appearance. Think of him as still waiting to hear the Jewish people say to him, as did Jacob, I will not let you go unless you bless me. And I have seen God face to face, yet my life is preserved. Just as Jacob feared death at the hands of his enemy brother Esau, but grew confident that because he had seen God, his life would be preserved, so those who have seen God in the face of Jesus the Messiah know that they have eternal life despite anything the adversary may do. Also, Messianic Jews no longer approach their Gentile brothers in fear as enemies. Messianic Jews no longer have to see their Arabic Christian brothers as enemies. So we can pray for Israel to find the blessing that is Jesus. So how else can we pray for Israel? Well, Israel was supposed to be a blessing in the world. So So I'm just going to say what I have here. In Genesis 12, we see that God is saying that Abraham is going to be a blessing. And that carries down to Isaac, and that's in Genesis 26. That he's going to be a blessing. I think we'll go there. This being a blessing is what is being called of Israel to be. And this is a whole message in itself. Any of these prayer points are a message in and of themselves. Genesis 26:3. So we hear, dwell in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. For to you and your descendants I will give all these lands, and I will perform the oath which I swore to Abraham your father, and I will make your descendants multiply as the stars of the heaven, and I will give to your descendants all these lands, and in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. So Isaac dwelt in Gerar. So this being a blessing goes from Abraham through Isaac to Israel. And Israel is supposed to be a blessing. And like I said, that's a study and a sermon all in itself and all the dynamics of how that's supposed to happen. But we can pray that Israel is a blessing in this world. Becomes a blessing in this world and stays a blessing in this world. Another prayer point for Israel is that Israel is supposed to be an agent of restoration and repair of the world. I'll say that again. Israel is supposed to be an agent of restoration and repair of the world. So we see snippets of this in Amos 5, 14 and 15 and verse 24, in Deuteronomy 16, 20, but it slowly starts to get into the consciousness of Judaism in early Judaism, about 3rd century, this notion of tikkun olam, or repair of the world, that Israel has a role to play to repair the world. There's even an early prayer third century prayer called the Aleinu. The verse translated from the Hebrew, this is part of the prayer. Let the time not be distant, O God, when all shall turn to you in love, when all the brokenness in our world is repaired by the work of our hands and our hearts, inspired by your words of Torah. So obviously that's only going to accomplish so much. I mean, Jesus is the answer. But we can pray that Israel becomes that agent of repair of the world. And so finally, for final prayer point number 4, we can pray for ourselves. And we can even call it tikkun halev, repair of the heart, repair of the mind, repair of our hearts and our minds. So Jesus repairs the heart with and through the Spirit of God, and through believers who walk in the Spirit. And I'll say that again. Jesus can repair us through the Spirit of God and through believers who walk in the Spirit. And through rich life with those believers together. It spurs us on to freedom and healing if this rich life together is driven by the Spirit of God. I'll say that again. If that rich life together is driven by the Spirit of God. You know, Jesus said, you know, about seeing the little fleck in the eye of another, but not seeing the log in your own. And so, you know, we have prayer points for America, for the church, for Israel in multiple ways, but we need to pray for ourselves too. So can we see that picture, satellite picture? Wow, so we saw a whole bunch and heard a whole bunch of borders and people and delineations and groups, subgroups. But what do we see when we look down from the heavens? It just looks so quiet. Just looks so peaceful. So I had thought that maybe I could make you all uncomfortable and we could break up into groups. And if someone here thinks that there's someone else here who could pray for them, that they really would like to have pray for them, if you could find that person, and if some person comes to you and says, hey, I really would love for you to pray for me, will you do that? I'd love you to consider praying for them. So number one, if I could make you guys all uncomfortable and we could pray a little bit that way. If we could also break up into small groups and consider these prayer points and pray together a few minutes on each one in small groups. So, you know, when I go to conferences, they're called Learn by Doing conferences. So you sit through bunches of lectures, and these intense people are giving these great lectures on movement and sports and performance. But that's in the morning. But then in the afternoon, you get into a big room with that guy or that gal, and they walk you through it. And they put you through it, and you do it. And they say in medicine, you know, learn one, do one, teach one. You know, you learn by doing as well as in the classroom, and then you go on and you learn by teaching. But these conferences, you go and you sit through lectures and you listen, but then you break out into groups and you do it. You do what was being shown, and you practice it, and you work with it with each other, and you talk with each other about it as you're doing it, and you learn it in a hands-on way. So what I want to do is have people break up for like 10 minutes. If anyone doesn't know, I have a timer. Yeah. Oh. Okay. Okay. That's fine. It's something that can happen at home.
There are a lot of good thoughts there and a lot to process. I just want to say two things to help give perspective on what was shared. One is from Daniel 12, verse 9. It's actually spoken twice in that chapter, that Daniel should close the book of prophecy because to understand all the things that are said will not come till the end of the time. So as we meditate on these things that Brian is talking about, how God is working to complete the work of the kingdom and the close of the age, there are some things that we're not going to get full clarity on until we come to the close of the age. We have more clarity than we used to, I believe. And especially that verse in Daniel that says, people will go to and fro and knowledge will increase. Well, that has happened in my life. I've gone to and fro a lot over the past years, and my knowledge, mainly through my children, has increased. But even so, the time is not yet. The time is coming, but it's not yet. So that's one thought I want to say. A prophecy is good to meditate on. We need to hold with an open hand. There are other things in the faith that are sure, that salvation comes from faith in Jesus. That's sure. So the things that we need to know for sure, we have, and the things that we don't know for sure, we'll learn at the right time, God. We can trust God for that. The other thing, though, is all these things that Brian's outlined to pray for, I think they're really worth meditating on, and the scriptures that he's given. And particularly one of the things I'm taking away from this is that I would like to pray that God touch the hip of Israel and weaken it. Because when I watch Israel's military people, I mean, it's a complex situation. I'm not commenting on that. But they are very strong. They are their own saviors right now. And they deny the Messiah. And sometimes they persecute those who love the Messiah. And we should pray that God would weaken the strong determination of Israel that opposes Messiah and opens many hearts. Now, that's happening in some places. And the last thing I want to comment on is that if you want to look for God's work in reconciliation between the Gentile and the Jew, look at Ephesians chapter 3. Here I'm adding yet another passage. Ephesians chapter 2 about the reconciling work of the gospel for the Jew and the Gentile. So those are my main comments there. Now, the opportunity to pray, we definitely have to dismiss the meeting for the sake of the children. So we'll do that right after we have announcements. But if some want to linger and pray, fine. The other thing, though, is that many of us are in small groups. And I encourage people to be in a small group if it's possible. Seek that out. And we can visit some of these things and discuss them in our small groups and pray. It's good for us in small groups to pray for personal needs, but it's also good for us to step back and say, Lord, we want to pray, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. It's really, I love how Jesus kind of makes it simple for us, even though it's hard to understand, but it's simple. Okay, that's the end of my comments here. Let's go to announcements. Do we have any announcements?